Europe in my backyard.
L'Europa in casa nostra.
Europa in mi casa.
Un'inchiesta radiofonica sulla politica di coesione europea.
Radijsko poručanje o evropski kohezijski politiki.
Europe in my backyard.
Radio reporting.
Un'inchiesta.
Radio reportage.
Un spazio radiofonico sobre la politica europea de coesión.
Az európai kohéziós politika nyomában.
Radio reporting.
Radio reportagen.
On European cohesion policy.
Über die europäische Kohäsionspolitik.
Hello and welcome to Europe in my backyard. I'm Paula Wiseman. And over the course of this series, we're going to be hearing about the many ways in which European cohesion policy impacts us all on our daily lives. So today, firstly, I'm going to be chatting with Donica McSorley from Pobble. And then in the second half of the show, I'm going to be chatting with Paul Hayes from the Northside Partnership. So let's start with you, Donica. How are you today?
Good, Paula. Thank you very much. Good.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for joining me today. So do you want to start off by telling us, I think a lot of people have heard of Pobble, but we might not necessarily know too much about what Pobble do as an organisation.
Okay, yeah, Paula, thank you. Pobble was established actually in 1992, so we're 30 years on the go now. And that was established by the Irish government, and it was in agreement with the EU because there was a focus on managing EU grants and local development, or for local development in the country. So since then, we've actually sort of moved on quite a bit, and we currently manage about 38 different programmes. The programmes themselves would vary quite a bit, from focus on social inclusion to early childhood care and education, across the board, community development, peace and reconciliation. So lots of different sort of angles on different programmes.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're the development coordinator, social inclusion and equality team, part of. So what's your role?
Part of Pobble's core role is to administer and manage the programme. So my function basically as a development coordinator, I work mainly on SICAP, which is the Social Inclusion and Community Activation Programme. And that's co-funded by European Social Fund. So my core role there is to actually support the delivery of that programme on the ground. So I work closely with the local community development committees that work out of the local authorities, and who manage the funds on behalf of the local development companies who actually implement the programme on the ground. So so Paul's work basically is who's coming up next in the show.
Yeah, so I mean, how does it work with the programmes? Do you find the programmes? Do the programmes find you? Or how does it work?
Yeah, look, a lot of the programmes are actually direct from government policy, and from EU policy as well. So, for example, at present, we'd actually be managing or administering three EU-funded projects through the European Social Fund. And the first of them would be the Ability Programme.
Right.
And that would come down from policy at European level, where there's a demand or a need, or would be fed up through local government as well to show that there's a need for this type of activity on the ground, or support on the ground for, say, young people with disabilities in this case, who are trying to get closer to the labour market or trying to engage with the labour market. So the Ability Programme would focus in that area. Peace funding, I think, would be another one on it that would sort of speak for itself, nearly, in the Peace Programme in Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
So that's a long-term programme that Pobble have been involved in and have been administering funding on that. And we'd currently be involved in Peace 4. And we'd be a member partner with Youth Pact, the Youth Pact project, which focuses on children and young people in the Peace Programme.
Yeah. So, I mean, is there any criteria for the programmes to match with Pobble?
There is indeed. Yeah. So look, the European funding itself, it's coming from the European Social Fund, and we're sort of in transition at the minute. We're sort of coming from the European Social Fund to the European Social Fund Plus.
Yeah.
And that fund, I suppose, at European level would be quite significant. It would be up on 99 billion of a fund. And that's sort of, when it breaks down through the member states, then the Irish allocation would be around 508 million from 2021 to 2027.
Oh, my God.
So it's a significant level of funding to be managed and to be rolled out within the country itself. That funding is matched then by government funding.
Yeah.
So the government of Ireland would match that across a number of programmes and would focus in on a number of themes through that as well. So it's a significant programme.
Yeah, I mean, so how does the ESF funding aspect of it help you as an organisation? I'm assuming you couldn't do what you do without this funding.
No, you certainly couldn't. Like the Social Inclusion and Community Activation Programme, it's more commonly known as SICAP, would be a good example of that. So That's currently match funded or co-funded, but by the ESF program, and that funding would enable SICAP to I suppose, be very focused on the work that it does. It would certainly help you to work in the most disadvantaged areas, to target more people on the ground, and to work with more local community groups. So without the funding itself, I suppose the achievements and the success of the program just wouldn't be at the level that it's at currently.
Yeah, I mean, can you tell us a little bit more about SICAP? What exactly is it?
I can indeed, yeah. SICAP would target supports at disadvantaged individuals and disadvantaged areas. It would provide supports such as employment supports when it comes to individuals, or education supports. In the predecessor program, the program would have drawn down approximately 40 million from the ESF, and that would have been, I suppose, fundamental in achieving the targets that it did achieve, which was work with 2,600 plus local community groups. And they would have provided grants to quite a large number of groups there as well. It worked with 501 social enterprises over the course of the predecessor program, or nearly annually with the program itself. And then it would work with approximately 26,000 clients each year and provide them clients with education and employment supports within the program. So what they would tend to look like when it comes down to the work on the ground itself, education supports could be accredited training, personal development, career planning. It could be CV preparation, interview skills, that type of thing. You know, there's language supports with new communities who are a target group. And then there's also, you know, basic advice and guidance. Or for some of the individuals who are looking to set up their own maybe business, there'd be business planning and support around business grants as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, is POBL, I'm assuming it's like it's a countrywide thing. Do you have kind of like local offices and things? Is that how it works as an organisation?
Yeah. Yeah, we do indeed. Yeah, we're based around the country. We're sort of more regional. We'd have offices in Cork and Dublin and up in the northwest and in Donegal. So we're spread out quite a bit around the country. So we would have services available in the majority of counties, not all. But we also would work on a cross-border basis when it comes to programs like the Peace Programme.
Yeah. So the ESF money, how does it even get to? I mean, I'm not imagining it's like a pot of money sort of thing, but how does it work? Do you get given an allocation kind of thing, then you work everything out on an individual basis per project kind of thing?
It sort of works like that. Certainly within the SICAP program, there's an allocation based on targets. So the specialty programs body would set targets each year, say for Peace, for example, or the ESF management committee would set targets for the SICAP program. And within them targets, then there'd be match funding available. So we draw down funding on the basis of achieving targets. So as part of that, the local development companies on the ground, it would be fairly seamless. They wouldn't know the difference between, I suppose, they know that there's EU funding involved, but it would be seamless from the point of view of drawing down funding from the government. And that funding would come in just in one lot to themselves, and they would manage their own plans locally, which is, I suppose, one of the benefits as well, that through the local development companies, they can sort of meet the local needs fairly quickly and be flexible around what's needed for individuals or for local community groups.
Yeah. I mean, there must be, like, as I've said to other guests on past programmes, there must be so many organisations that apply for this money. But do you know what I mean? It must be so hard to choose from, you know.
Yeah, there are indeed.
From like 100. Do you know what I mean? It must be really hard.
Yeah, the structure in Ireland, it's a little bit easier in a sense in that this funding through SICAP is procured over, say, a five-year period.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's procured locally. So the local development companies will be fundamental in that. And the local community development committees and the councils would apply for that funding directly themselves. So you have 31 of them, LCDCs, that would work through the local authorities. And then we have 46 local development companies around the country that would implement the funding on the ground. And that's across, it's probably 51 different areas if you break it down. So it's not one per county as such. Some counties, for example, would have more than one lot, like Dublin City would have five lots that work through and focus in on and set targets for each year.
Yeah, so it's like a massive machine, really, with all these little cogs.
It is indeed, and that's at the higher level, I suppose. It filters down then within each of them areas to the local community groups or to individuals. So, you know, the programme tends to focus its work fairly much on target groups. It would work with specific target groups like long-term unemployed or children and parents. You know, for example, people with disabilities or lone parents. So it would focus the work down then and try and target it specifically, because while it's quite a lot of money, and it sounds like a lot of money nationally, there's a lot of work that needs to be done and a lot of supports need to be provided. So the SICAP program would certainly focus its work directly on specific target groups.
Yeah. I mean, can you tell us a little bit more about some of the projects that you're helping at the moment?
Can indeed, yeah. So look, on the ground itself, the probably a good example would have been the response to COVID. So SICAP in its own right would have stepped in there, and it would have, you know, been fairly adaptable at the local level and flexible to actually provide support directly that were needed. And depending on which area that was in, the supports would change. So for example, in the SICAP response to COVID, they would have been contacting vulnerable groups straight away. So target groups, whether it be Roma or travellers or disadvantaged groups in local areas, and they would have been making information available to them. So providing information on COVID, providing information on other programmes that are available.
Yeah.
They'd certainly provide, you know, likes of online training supports to both individuals, you know, they would have moved their training a lot online in the last couple of years due to the lack of face-to-face meetings with clients on the ground.
Yeah.
They would have mobilized communities, like they would have engaged with other agencies and bodies and coordinated responses locally when it came to the COVID response itself, and would have been fundamental in setting up some of the food hubs for distribution of meals and other resources to local families where there was a need seen or established.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? I mean, I think we all take these things for granted, these food hubs and all the stuff that was going on during COVID. And it's only kind of when you start looking at it properly, you hear all this money that's being pumped in from Europe, helping all these amazing projects. It's kind of crazy when you think about
it. Yeah, and there's fairly good outcomes. Like at the end of the day, at a program level, you can see the benefit because you see the sort of the data, and that would be one of the roles that public would have, to collect that data and present it back to try and help or influence policy within government. And you can see with SICAP, you know, out of the 26 odd thousand people that were supported, say last year, you'd have you know, a high percentage, up in 40%, that would have engaged with in courses or lifelong learning type activity. You'd have 6% of them individuals would have found employment directly through the program itself, and that would have been across a variety of sectors. And then you'd have a higher number again, even 7% actually set up their own businesses. So you can see sort of concrete results from the work itself, and you can see the outcomes for individuals through the work that's actually been provided by the program.
Yeah, I mean, do you get to see much of the end result of your work?
We do actually, yeah. We're lucky enough in the sense of we actually, the structure that we have in place, we provide within Pubble, we sort of look for evidence, obviously, not just data. So we look for stories of what happens on the ground. So we actually get quite a number of case studies in each year, whether it be about individual beneficiaries or local community groups or the work that's been delivered on the ground. And we tend to showcase them back to a wider audience where possible, and we publicize them so to try and learn from the good practice that's actually happening. So yeah, each year we're lucky enough in that we don't necessarily get directly to meet with the individuals, but we get to hear about stories and we get to hear about the benefits of the stories. And we certainly would with through support workshops, which we're hosting now shortly again, we'd get to, in some cases, engage with some of the individuals or the local community groups that are involved to see what benefits they've had from the program and to get their story firsthand.
Yeah, absolutely amazing what you're doing, Donika. And thank you so, so much for chatting with me today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Paula.
So now I am lucky enough to be chatting with Paul Hayes, the Education Coordinator for the Northside Partnership. So, hey, Paul, how are you?
Not bad, Paula. Thanks for having me on today.
No worries at all. So for people that have not heard of the partnership before, can you tell us a little bit about what the Northside Partnership is and what you do as an organisation?
Yeah, definitely. Well, Paula, look, we're a community-based organisation. Mm-hmm. We're based in the North Dublin area, so we do. But kind of the remit that I kind of look after within the Northside Partnership is the kind of the education piece, or try and support young people and adults who are thinking about education, who want to maybe explore their options further, to maybe progress their ideas and look at education as a viable option, and try and, I suppose, try and progress their ideas on paper into real life, I suppose, as such, and try and get around maybe some of the different barriers that maybe exist for them to get back to education. So that's kind of, you know, in a nutshell, what we try to do. But we have a number of different programs, Paula, that help support young people and adults with this. So we do, and look, I'm sure we can talk about them, you know, as we go through the conversation. But we have a number of them. Like, we have the Career Guidance Service. So we have, as you're probably aware, like, we also have a number of different scholarships that we help support students with whenever they want to progress their education light years. Then we have a number of other different educational programs. One in particular is called the Challenger Program, which we help young people from sixth class to sixth year with interventions or supports along that journey. So
yeah,
we would help the transition from kind of from primary school onto secondary school and help them with a number of different supports along that journey.
Yeah. So, I mean, how do you, do people come to you, or how does it work? How do people come and find you, or do you find people? How does it work?
It's a mixture of a lot of different aspects. You know, I have to say, like, we're blessed in the Northside Partnership. We have fantastic links with other community organisations.
Mm.
And they kind of know of the different services that we provide. And it's a lot of it, I have to say, is word of mouth. But we do have a fantastic communications person in the Northside Partnership that helps communicate our message out to the community and try and encourage anybody that is in my area, anybody that's thinking about education, to try and call into us, to give us a call, and so that we can maybe kind of schedule a time where we can sit down and we can have a chat about their options and how we can move these kind of ideas and situations forward into real life, I suppose, as such, and to look at the barriers that exist for them to get back to education.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking to with Donica McSorley earlier from Pobble. It must be a nice to have that partnership with those guys helping you out.
Very much so, very much so. Without the support of Pobble, a lot of these programmes that we run within Northside Partnership wouldn't be possible. They're fantastic support for us, so they are, and they enable us to do a lot of the great work that we do. Like last year, Paula, we were able to support over 200 students.
Wow.
With contributions towards their educational expenses. And I know that there is a lot of state support out there, like SUSE or the Back to Education Alliance and so on and so forth, but there is these different types of courses that fall into particular grey areas, and it's a lot more difficult to get state support for these courses, like part-time courses or short-term courses or particularly niche courses. We kind of see it within the Northside Partnership. That's a kind of an area that we would kind of step into and try and help support the individuals with this. We mightn't contribute to all the expense, but we're stepping into areas. We're trying to make it possible for people to access education.
Yeah. I mean, so how does it work? Are you given, I don't know about how technical you want to get, but are you given a number and you're kind of told how much you have to work with and you kind of work from there? How do you know how much to allocate to each project, to each person?
There's a number of different scholarships within the Northside Partnership, and they all have kind of their rules and their criteria in order to apply for the support. Like, we're very keen to talk to potential students that are looking to progress their education ideas from our catchment area. They usually have to be from a low income or welfare dependent background, but we look at the individual circumstances of the particular family that are looking for support, and we look at the kind of the barriers that present themselves. Like, so say for example, if a student is thinking about doing maybe a post, like a PLC course in the likes of Cluster Duilig or some of the other colleges of further education, and we look and see exactly, you know, where the barriers exist. So say for example, it could be the fees, the registration charge,
yeah,
the fees that could present an issue. And as you probably were, like, you know, there's not much state support with making a contribution towards these fees. So the likes of the Northside Partnership steps into that space and was able to make that possible for that person. And like, we're very keen to help a lot of the students around the North Dublin area to progress their ideas within education, because we see that as a real kind of viable way to help young people to progress their careers and to get into the potential and make them that bit more employable in the future.
Yeah, I mean, that's what EU funding is all about, isn't it? It's about, you know, there's a lot of upskilling and helping people reach their full potential, I suppose.
That's it. Like, yeah, it's using the support and the funding enabled to for the young people in order for them to access their ideas or in order for them to kind of progress their career thinking and make it possible for them, you know.
Yeah. So I was talking with Donica earlier about the SICAP end of things.
Yes.
Can you kind of tell us a little bit more about how SICAP works?
Yeah. Well, within education, the SICAP project, it kind of funds a lot of these projects within a lot of the educational projects within the North South Partnership.
Mm.
One in particular, as I mentioned earlier, there was the Challenger Programme. And the Challenger Programme is funded by the SICAP programme, so it is. And within the Challenger Programme, we have a Challenger Coordinator who kind of coordinates all the activities. So we would have activities for students from sixth class right through to sixth year. And
yeah.
I'll give you a bit of a flavour of what they do. Like, so say, for example, in sixth class, they would do like conversational Irish, reading club, public speaking, and then cultural trips as well. And as they come to different crunch times in the year, like, so say, for example, if a student is in third year and is doing their junior cert, we would help them with grinds during their junior cert or during their leaving cert as well. So a lot of this funding that we get from SICAP is used to support these activities and to help the young people around the kind of the Dublin 17, Dublin 5 areas to improve their grades in order to make like third level education a possibility. We've noticed over the years, Paula, that an awful lot of young people from the Dublin 17 area don't progress on to third level education.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Challenger programme has been set up, really designed to do that, to help support them with their kind of needs. In essence, we're trying to say, like, money shouldn't be an issue for a young person who wants to progress their education further. And we're trying to step into that space to make it not an issue, you know?
Yeah. No, it's an incredibly invaluable service that you're doing. I mean, I know myself, we've had dealings in the past, and I was doing a degree up at Colossus Doolig, and the partnership, and yourself, of course, were just incredible. You know, I mean, you know, helping with fees and advice. It's just, I couldn't have done it, to be honest, without people and organisations like yourself and the Northside Partnership.
It's great. It's great to hear that, Paula. I know, like, it's and that in essence is down to the good work of Donica and, you know, the SICAP funding in place that has allowed us to do the great work of the, you know, to help so many students around the area. Like last year, as I said to you, like, we helped over 200 students with financial contributions towards their education.
Mm.
And the great thing is, we're stepping into places where state support only goes so far. We're able to make it possible then for students, and it's great that we have the support of Donica, and the support of the SICAP fund as well, in order to continue that good work, you know.
Yeah, it's one of these things, do you know what I mean? It's only until sort of recently, you don't really think about where this money comes from. Do you know what I mean? Like, I didn't, you kind of say, right, I'm thankful for this money, but you don't know, you know, you don't like to ask even where the money comes from.
Yeah, but whenever you kind of, if you boil it down, like, it's coming from a lot of these government support funds, you know, like, for example, the SICAP fund, and it's brilliant, the work that we're able to do from that then, so we are.
Yeah, so, I mean, how important would you say is the EU fund, is the funding from SICAP? Could you do what you do without it?
I don't believe we could, Paula. We're blessed to, like, we have a few other scholarships that we have within the Northside Partnership, and they are funded from the generosity of local businesses
mm.
and community groups around the area, but it doesn't come anywhere near the amount of funding that we receive from the SICAP fund. And I have to say, like, you know, without the support of, you know, Donica and the SICAP fund, we wouldn't be able to do anywhere near the quantity of work that we were able to do, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, do you get to see much of the, you know, you take these people in and you give them this invaluable help, as I said. Do you get to see much of the end result, kind of when they've done their courses and when they've done their programmes and things?
Yeah, we definitely do. Like, usually after 6 months after the person, say, progresses from their course or completes their course, we usually try and communicate with the person then at that point to see, number one, I suppose, if they have completed their course and
mm.
what they're doing at the moment, if we can help further, you know, like, if they're maybe looking for work, we can signpost them onto some other kind of department or some other kind of support service within the Northside Partnership. So we're constantly trying to engage with people to try and, I suppose, to look at where they're at the moment, where they want to get to, and try and help them to get around that there in order to make it possible for us, you know?
Yeah. No, as I said, it's just, it's one of these kind of, it's like a hidden gem. Do you know what I mean? You're helping these hundreds and hundreds of people, you know, further themselves, better themselves. I think, you know, I just wanted to say you're doing an amazing, amazing job.
Okay, but look, it's great. It's great. The more people that can kind of link in with our services, Paul, the better. Like, you know, and this is a great medium that we can kind of maybe talk to the communities that we're kind of engaging with, you know, encouraging them to come in. And funny, I was talking to our communications officer this morning just about this, that, you know, this time of year in particular, the SUSE grant is opened up again.
Yeah.
So it is. And, you know, like, a lot of people are probably putting a bit more structure around their ideas regarding progressing their educational options. And, you know, this time of year is great, but if people can engage with the Northside Partnership now at this point, then we can get them registered, then we can have a chat with them about their ideas and what their thinking is, and try and put then the structures in place in order to make it possible for them to progress their kind of educational options. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if there's people, if there's anybody listening, you know, people listening that are thinking about going back into education in September, how do they get involved? How would they approach yourselves?
Yeah, probably just a number of ways. Like, Paula, like, they can just ring in, they can pop into Northside Partnership, and we can get their details, or they can ring into Northside Partnership. The initial step is that we get them registered, so we do. So we complete kind of an online registration process to begin with, so we can collect their data. And then after that, then we start to look at their kind of where they're at the moment and where they want to get to, and try and help support them with that journey. But I suppose, or alternatively, they could email me as well. Whatever medium suits the person, I'm all about that, you know.
Yeah.
I suppose it's just a matter of kind of them raising their hand and reaching out for help and support, and we're definitely well equipped to help support them.
Yeah, it's just about knowing that the support is there, doesn't it? I mean, so many people panic when they hear, do you know what I mean, they've got to find $6,000 or whatever for a course.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's a lot of money for anybody these days.
It is. And I have to say, Paula, we've great links and relationships built with all the different kind of educational stakeholders in the community. And I have to say, like the likes of Clochadulic in their admissions office, or the likes of DCU, the likes of something like National College of Ireland, like a lot of these organisations would reach back to the Northside Partnership if they know there's a particular student in serious need of support. And, you know, we try and coordinate, you know, that you know, like Northside Partnership's there to help support students with their progression. And, you know, like we've built up great relationships with all these kind of people in order to, I suppose, to communicate to particular students. You know, like I often find that some students come sometimes, you know, when they run up against brick walls or kind of barriers, and maybe bury their head in the sand, you know.
Yeah.
And if they, you know, like if whenever they're talking to these organisations, it's great because they could make referrals into ourselves and the partnership, and we're able to help support them with that. Another organisation we get great support from is St Vincent de Paul as well. Whenever they're out and communicating with the families in the community, you know, oftentimes the conversation comes up about education and not being able to access education or whatever for a variety of different reasons, then we would get a lot of referrals from St Vincent de Paul as well, which is fantastic.
Yeah. I just want to say thanks again, Paul, for all your invaluable help over the last couple of years. And thank you so much for chatting with me today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Brilliant, Paula. Look, I appreciate the time. Come on. Thank you.
So that's all from us this week. Thank you so, so much to my guests, Donica McSorley from Pobble and Paul Hayes from the Northside Partnership.
Europe in My Backyard is financed by the Department for Regional and Urban Policy through the European Commission.